listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world. Now, from Vancouver, British Columbia, here is your host, Kelsey Mowat.
Welcome to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining us again is my esteemed colleague and co-host, Brendan Lear. Brendan, how are you doing?
Very well, Kelsey.
Good.
So, actually, I got some serious ass sweat going on right now because I'm in Toronto. It's very hot here right now.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. It's pretty, like, I haven't been in Toronto in quite a while now, but yeah, the last time I was there in the middle of summer, and it was hot as hell, and it was really, really humid, and I didn't care for it.
The weather is a bit stifling if you're not used to the humidity, but the summary is good-looking people, ugly dogs, very large and frightening-looking squirrels, friendly folks, easy to give you directions, and pretty cool, and very very nice vibe. Feel very safe here, even though there's lots of folks around.
Now, unfortunately, Brendan, you're not going to be able to join us for the Jeff Munson interview, which is too bad, but you know, I understand that you've got bills to pay and you got to take care of your other responsibilities.
Well, believe it or not, you know, drawing on an internet radio show doesn't really take care of me and my youngins, so I got to do other stuff to make ends meet, but it's unfortunate, and I will really, really miss the opportunity to speak to Jeff Munson, especially now that I think he's being worked up as a bit of a cad by the UFC.
Yeah, let's get into that. We've got another packed show, as always. I know I say that every week, so it's probably growing tired on everyone.
Is it going to be true at some point?
Yeah, I'm sounding like Conan O'Brien, you know? It's like, yeah, every time, it's the best show ever. But this week, honestly, it's good stuff. Jeff Munson, and then also Bill the Butcher Mahood is going to join us as well, and he's going to talk to us about Team Epic and his career. So that should be interesting too. But yeah, let's get right into it. UFC 61. Obviously, you know, you talked about Jeff Munson being kind of made into a cad. He defeated Anthony Parrish by TKO in the first round. Looked impressive doing so. And you're right; they're billing him as the man who's going to fight Tim Sylvia next.
Well, it was interesting. I noticed on the UFC website that on the 4th of July, they allowed Jeff Munson to write an article that drew all sorts of criticism, of course. And Munson is a big sort of what Noam Chomsky would call an anarcho-syndicalist, and has some very outspoken views about the Bush government and the war in Iraq. So he's very much being played up, I think, as a in what they used to call in Lucha Libre the rudo, the bad guy. And it's an interesting, I guess this is the way they're going to sell it, with Tim Sylvia being the rah-rah guy and Munson being the cad. I guess that's one of the ways they're going to market the next big heavyweight fight.
Yeah, you know, and I think, to be honest, I think that's kind of going a little outside of fighting in the sense that, you know, really, that's, you know, got a little bit too much of a professional wrestling theme to it, if that's indeed what they're trying to do, and I hope that that's not what they're trying to do. I think, you know, they should focus on the matchup, which will be an interesting one. Jeff Munson's a world-class submission artist, great wrestling game, big powerhouse packed into that 5'9" frame versus Tim Sylvia, the tall striker, so it should be an interesting matchup.
I believe so as well, and it will be interesting to see. Hopefully, see Sylvia finally taken down, and see what he's got on the ground. He's always claimed to have a good, a solid ground game, but we haven't seen him down there. And the only time we have, it's turned out to be fairly devastating for him. So I think he's maybe perhaps redeem himself on the ground. But I think the other problem with marketing these fights as sort of mini dramas is one that we witnessed with the Kem Shamrock and Tito fight, and that it actually interferes with the way the fight was perceived. You know, the forums were lit up with early stoppage and, you know, unfair to Ken and so on and so forth. But you put any two other fighters in that position and someone eats five unanswered elbows, the fight's called, and then, you know, no controversy at all. But because it was Ken And Tito, now it becomes a big controversy, and, you know, Herb Dean's a bad guy, and it's ridiculous, actually.
Yeah, you know, and I agree with you, and it seems like I always end up agreeing with you. Perhaps I should just start lying and saying I disagree to make the show more entertaining. But, yeah, I agree with you. You know, at first I thought that it was perhaps a little bit premature, but once I watched the replay a few dozen more times, you know, you realize, like, Shamrock was taking some hard shots, and yes, maybe Herb Dean could have allowed another one or two to go, and maybe Ken could have pulled something out of you-know-where and you know, tied up Tito or gone for, you know, swept him or something, but I didn't see it happening, and I think that fight would have been stopped within another 15 seconds anyways if it had been allowed.
Well, you know, the first elbow, Shamrock straightened out like a mackerel, and yeah. I don't think people don't realize the significance of that, and, you know, it was one of those cases, I think, where I'm sure Tito would testify to this, that, you know, maybe he was knocked out and woken back up, but again, you know, any two other fighters in that situation, zero controversy.
Yeah, and, you know, again, it goes to show, I mean, my call on that fight was wrong. I thought that Tito was going to win, but I thought the fight would go a bit longer. And, you know, once again, hey, power to all the props to the UFC marketing team, because they're selling it, and people wanted to see that fight. And the night of the fight, I got calls from people wanting to come over, watch the fight, or wanting to know where I was going to go watch the fights at a bar, etc., who don't even normally watch the UFC. And I'm getting messages like, oh, isn't there that huge fight tonight, you know, between the two best guys in the world, like Tito Ortiz and what's his name, Shamrock? And yeah, so obviously, you know, they did a good job, and a lot of people thought that fight was going to be one for the ages, and, you know, it wasn't. And I really hope on everything that is holy on this planet, and this, I don't mean this in any disrespect to Mr. Ken Shamrock, who has done so much for this sport, I really, really hope that there is not a Ken Shamrock Tito Ortiz number 3. Because yeah, Goldberg started going into it right away on the broadcast. Well, you know, maybe it's time for a third fight. I mean, come on.
I would have to agree with you. It would be very disappointing. And, you know, it really takes away. They had, even on the pay-per-view, they had, you know, 10 minutes of hyping the fight again. You know, they've already bought the pay-per-view. Just show the fight, and for the love of God, show some undercards.
Yeah, I agree.
Because, you know, I think both of the last two pay-per-views, I'm sure, were enormous buys for the UFC. But you can only, you know, you can only do that so many times and have what are otherwise lackluster pay-per-view cards, you know, because finally people's trust is going to give out, and they're going to say, well, you know, maybe I don't like the looks of this one next time, or, you know, I can't justify paying $40 to watch a minute and a half fight when all the other fights were lackluster, they were almost predictably lackluster as well, which is more problematic. You know, on any show, you know, fights can look bad or fights can be so-so. But I think this card especially, and you notice a lot of this was actually predictably lackluster because of some of the fighters involved, and because I think of the the overwhelming emphasis on heavyweight fights. And I hate to harp on the UFC heavyweights, and I didn't actually see the. The Munson fight, but the fights that we watched were not particularly entertaining.
Yeah, and thankfully, you know, it looks like the UFC is heading in the right direction. They've got, you know, we've always, the last couple weeks that we've been doing the show, we've gone on repeatedly about the way the welterweight division is looking and the lightweight division is looking, and, you know, obviously with Vanderlei Silva coming into the mix, it looks to me like the UFC is not going to have to rely on, you know, these Ken Shamrock Tito grudge match kind of deals anymore. And hopefully, you know, it looks like it's going to have a very promising future, and as the sport builds, the UFC will get away from this, and they'll, you know, start doing what all us hardcore MMA fans have been hoping for, and they're already doing that. And I agree with you, the best fights of the night for me are Josh Berkman and Josh Neer. And, you know, even the Stevenson-Edwards fight, which was really gory and disturbing at moments, still was offered some really compelling action.
Mm-hmm. I was very surprised. If Chris Lieben has always boasted his chin, then I have to give Stevenson credit for having a rock-solid temple. Because I thought he was going to go to sleep when Eves high kicked him, and he basically ate a high kick in the head. And props to him for recovering from that.
What were your thoughts on the main event?
The main event, well, it was unclear. I guess it's clear now that the news has come out that Arlovski sustained an injury as a result of a kick during the fight. But the main event, you know, it was painful to watch because after three rounds, you know, everyone that I was watching with was wondering, what's Arlovski's corner telling him? You know, he's got to do something else in the fight because, you know, I think it's similar to boxing. You're not going to strip a champion, you know, on a close decision. It just won't happen. And I guess it makes more sense. It makes more sense to hear that Arlovski was injured, although that's certainly no compensation, I suppose, for having to sit through that, what was basically a sparring match.
Yeah, I mean, it became sort of a strategic, chess match in a sense, that only real sort of boxing and striking aficionados could appreciate, and that might even be a stretch, but... You know, I give credit to Tim Sylvia. He went out there, and Brendan, for those who might not have heard last week's predictions, maybe you can inform our listening audience on who did Kelsey Mowat predict to win the Tim Sylvia Arlovski fight.
Kelsey, I will take the first official. I will wear the first official eat shit hat, and I will eat my words. As you predicted Tim Sylvia, I predicted Arlovski, and I predicted Arlovski to win soon, and I believe the word was heinously, and it did not come to pass. So,
and you were somewhat harsh in your criticism of my prediction, if I remember correctly, and somewhat cocky.
I expressed some amazement, perhaps cocky, perhaps no, I don't think cocky, but I expressed some amazement.
Yes. Well, I mean, let's just remember who. When the show is introduced, it says with Kelsey Mowat and not Brendan Lear. And now, for all you listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio, you know exactly why. And stay tuned. We've got a packed show. And coming up, the Snowman will be joining us on Full Contact Fighter Radio.
Mixed martial arts legends collide at the Midwestern debut of the International Fight League, Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. See the wildest International Fight League team competition yet as the Quad City Silverbacks defend their home turf against the New York Pit Bulls. And be there to witness the return of hometown hero Pat Miletich as he squares off in a fight to the finish against jiu-jitsu master Enzo Gracie. 11 total fights, including Quad City taking on New York and the Columbus Razor Club, led by Mark Coleman, battling the Toronto Dragons, coached by Carlos Newton. Plus, the historic supermatch of Miletich versus Gracie. It all happens Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. Tickets start at $28.50 and are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Or charge by phone at 563-326-1111. That's 563-326-1111. The International Fight League. Pure sport. For more information, go to IFL.TV.
By now, you've probably seen dozens of your favorite MMA fighters wearing Full Contact Fighter clothing. But hey, listen, you don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the FCF shop, we have all that you require for your fightwear needs. From NHB corduroy hats, tricot jackets, to camo board shorts, or the NHB Extreme Fight shorts, our famous hoodies, to the classic Full Contact Fighter t-shirts, all your MMA clothing can be found at www.fcfighter.com. Pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or you can also reach FCF to place an order by calling 516-676-0033. Also now open is a Full Contact Fighter sticker and banner shop, plus a full assortment of all your favorite official IFL team clothing is now available at fcfighter.com, or call us. Again, that number is 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world.
Well, I grew up quick and I grew up mean. My fists got hard, my wits got keen. Roamed from town to town to hide my shame. But I made me a vow to the moon and stars, I'd search the honky-tonks and bars and kill that man that gave me that awful name. Well, it was Gatlinburg in mid-July and I'd just hit town and my throat was dry. I thought I'd stop and have myself a brew at an old saloon on a street of mud.
Hey guys, this is Jason Athlete McDonald, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Bowen.
All right, well, joining us now on Full Contact Fighter Radio is Mr. Jeff Munson. Jeff, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Just got back to Seattle from Florida and after the fight, so feel good to be back in town.
Yeah, I was going to say, you've been doing. It seems like you've been doing a lot of traveling the last couple of days. You must be kind of tired of planes, I would imagine.
Yeah, tired of the planes, but haven't been back in 6 weeks to my hometown, so it's been nice to be back.
Yeah, I bet. Now, obviously, you're coming off the win over Anthony Perosh at UFC 61. They showed, for the people who didn't see the undercard fights, you know, we saw the highlights of the fight, you know, the big TKO win in the first round. Was that something you had set out to do, Jeff, as far as trying to demonstrate your striking skills? I think, you know, everyone's well aware of your ground game. Was that a set game plan on your behalf?
You know, fights are weird. It's just, you know, I didn't anticipate it's going to be a knockout on the feet, but, you know, things like that happen. I've been working a lot of boxing with Howard Davis and Josh Shockman, so I'm not surprised it happened that way, but, you know, if fights are weird things, you just never know what's going to happen. The game plan was to put pressure on him, and pressure, and I knew if I punched and kicked and, you know, took him down or whatever, that something was going to open up, and that's just what it happened to be.
Now, you mentioned the training with Howard Davis down at America Top Team in Florida, and you said that, you know, fights, you're absolutely right, you have to kind of go where the fight dictates. But does that ever sort of, has that ever irked you as far as people sort of only considering you mostly a ground fighter when obviously you demonstrate some pretty great stand-up skills the other night?
You know, I just want to win, and like what people say they're going to say, and, you know, as a fan or whatever, I critique, you know, if I'm watching a fight, I'll critique what's going on and going, oh, this guy should work on this or whatever that. So, you know, a fan, people have opinions, and they should have opinions, and, you know, obviously if one of your assets is much stronger than the other, they're going to say, well, he's got good strong, but his strike is not as good, whatever. So, you know, I just kind of take it in stride and continue to, you know, like I said, work with Josh Howard and try to get better. So, you know, that my goal is to get my striking, you know, better, and so it can be more of a weapon, not just occasional.
Now, this is the third win in a row for you now in the UFC. You know, just a review for people listening, beating Lee Hinkle and Marcio Cruz and now Anthony. What are your thoughts so far on your return to the UFC? Are you, you know, obviously you're not going to be discouraged with three wins in a row, but do you think that people are starting to catch wise to the news that, you know, Jeff Munson's back and he's a contender in the heavyweight division?
You know, all I can do is win, and, you know, I hope that each win, you know, kind of builds me up that way. You know, I've been told that I'm going to fight Tim Sylvia, so those fights were just kind of a precursor, I guess, to get to the point where I want to be at, and that's to win the UFC title. And I'm giving myself a shot now, so it's kind of up to me to, you know, take advantage of the fact that I was given a chance in the UFC and that I've gotten some wins now there. So, you know, I'm going to fight Tim Sylvia, and you know, it's kind of a one chance. You know, you lose and you kind of go back in obscurity. You're just one loss away from people thinking you suck again. So,
yeah.
You know, I just got to make the most of my opportunity.
Now, you mentioned the upcoming fight with Tim Sylvia, and, you know, now people are starting to talk about that matchup. Of course, Tim defeating Andrei Arlovsky at UFC 61. You know, I've heard a couple interviews with Tim and read a couple of interviews as well as in respect to yourself, and he seems to be, you know, pretty confident that he doesn't believe you'll be able to take him down. Do you have any thoughts on that at this stage?
I'm convinced that he thinks he's going to run through me, and he's told me that flat out, and he tells everyone that, and I know he was real anxious to fight me after he beat Arlovsky the first time instead of have a rematch with him because he thought it'd be an easier fight. So, you know, all I can do is prepare myself as good as I can to fight him. You know, it's a definitely interesting matchup. If we go to the floor, you know, obviously it's going to be my advantage. We standing up, it's to his advantage. And, you know, you don't have to, like, pretend to have some secret game plan or something going into that because everybody knows, you know, he knows and I know that I'm not going to sit there and trade 1-2s with him, and he knows that he's not going to be pulling guard on me. So,
right.
it makes for an interesting matchup, but it makes for, I think it's going to be an exciting match. And, you know, I don't think the fight's going to go the distance. It ain't going to go five rounds either direction. So for the UFC, I think it's a good matchup for them because I think it'll be an exciting fight. You know, two totally different styles trying to, you know, kind of force their game on the other person. You know, saying that, you know, I'm sure he's working on his ground, and I'm definitely working on my stand-up as well coming to this fight. So, you know, I'm not going to go in there. Guys have just gone in and tried to shoot on him, have obviously paid the price. So, you know, I got to have some stand-up as well. And, you know, people say he's got nothing on the ground, and that's, you know, the BS, because obviously he trains with the military camp, and he does have some ground skills. So, but it will be an interesting matchup because we do have two contrasting styles, and obviously the height advantage. He's got 11 inches on me, and the reach advantage and stuff will pose some problems. So, you know, just have to come in really prepared and see what happens.
Now, I know Tim mentioned in some of his interviews as well that he was a little unhappy with the fact that he didn't feel that the fight with Andre was billed as, you know, as much promoted as much as perhaps it should have been. And then if you look at yourself, you know, now they're talking that, you know, you two are going to fight. Were you somewhat surprised that your fight wasn't shown on pay-per-view, or do you just kind of look at it and like, well, whatever, you know, it went five rounds? And
you know, I wish it was, because, you know, obviously to promote this fight a little better, and I, you know, hopefully they'll throw on Spike TV or something like that up leading up to the fight. You know, I would have put it on there if it was me, but, you know, I thought it was going to be an exciting fight, but, you know, my fight against Petapano, Marcia Cruz, was boring, and he's basically the same style guy, jiu-jitsu guy, tall, with a long reach, and, you know, like, they would have not been happy to have the same kind of performance, you know. So, you know, it's kind of myself to blame for that as well. So they'll just try to put the fights on the TV that they think are going to be the most appealing. And, you know, like Joe Silva said, they wanted that fight on TV. But, you know, after kind of the ruckus of the Shamrock-Ortiz fight kind of delayed some time, and then the heavyweight title going five rounds, who expected that, you know, then you know, they just ran out of time, and like you said, he expected that to be on air.
Right.
You know, when that's the first prelim fight that they were going to have on there, and you know, it's been ages since they weren't able to put a prelim fight on, even one on there. So, you know, it was just kind of unexpected. So,
well, yeah, I don't think anyone expected that the Tim Sylvia Arlovsky fight to go five rounds. Did you get a chance to see the fight? Did you agree with the judge's decision?
You know, I saw the fight, and yeah, you know, I think, basically that Tim stalked him down and was a little more aggressive. So, you know, as far as I don't remember how I would have thought each round went, but if I just looked at the fight as whole, you know, they each, you know, Arlovsky's got great, you know, really good boxing. I don't think he really got damaged that much, and obviously Tim didn't get damaged too much, but, you know, if 25 minutes, you're going to take some shots, and I think the fact that Tim was just more aggressive throughout the fight, is why he got the decision. You know, I mean, you couldn't argue with him getting it, for sure.
Now, you've won like a crazy amount of fights in a row. It's up to like 16, I think, in a row, if I've got that straight, since 2002. Do you attribute that to anything in particular? You know, anything that you sort of, did you change up the way you approach training your professional career after having a couple losses in your first go around in the UFC?
A couple of things happened. First of all, I joined ATT, and I lost and I basically had to change my style. And, you know, I lost the first couple of fights under them, and, you know, but I had to rearrange my game. I probably could have won a couple of fights I had lost or done a little better, but I think my ceiling would have been a lot lower had I just kept with the style I was doing and not, like, evolved my game. So, you know, taking that, I kind of had to start from square one, start over some things, and I, you know, I think I sacrificed, you know, a couple, you know, in the ring a couple times, but overall it was a good thing, you know. And then I, you know, I had a serious injury. I tore my bicep and had surgery. I was out for a year, and so when I came back, I had to redo my training, redo my lifting, start working with Juan Santana and Roddy Ferguson at Institute of Human Performance, and that helped a lot. instead of kind of doing the bodybuilding, kind of lifting and stuff I was doing before, which was not helping my, you know, not helping you for fighting. Mm-hmm. And I think the combination of working out with ATT and then working over at IHP, having all those black belts to work out with every day, and great coaching, and then Howard Davis came on, and, you know, the support network was incredible. When you have that much support and those kind of people behind you all the time pushing you, believing in you, you know, even when other people are saying, drop this guy, or this guy's no good, or, you know, that, and they're believing in you, and they're 100% convinced that you're going to win, you know, it rubs off on you. And I just, not only do you want to do well for yourself, but you want to do well for them. You want to represent the team well. And when they're pushing you and giving you the greatest facility, the best guys to train with every day, and all those things right in front of you, you can't help but get better. And I think, you know, I don't think it's any coincidence that that's around the time I turned my career around.
Now, when you're looking at the American Top Team website, it mentions that you are starting up your own American Top Team West. Is that still going on, and where is that?
We've cut it because the rent was really high, and so we're opening another one in Olympia early this fall, probably September, October, and I'm working with Dennis Hallman on that, and we're actually building our own building's being built, and
okay.
Pouring the concrete for it and everything like that. So we'll have our own building, and we're going to run some camps, some, you know, pre-Abu Dhabi camps, some grappling camps, and some MMA camps, and as well as having just general like jiu-jitsu and kickboxing and stuff for the public. So yeah, that is in the works.
Okay. Now, with the rise of, you know, mixed martial arts, it's gotten so much more popular. A lot of fans are introduced to the sport, especially in North America, primarily through the Ultimate Fighter reality show and the fights that they show on Spike TV. And yourself, you know, you've got many, many famous wins in your grappling wrestling background, including the 2005 Abu Dhabi Heavyweight Championship division. Do you find now that the sport's kind of changed in the sense that maybe perhaps 5 years ago when, you know, a good consensus, there's a good portion of MMA fans trained in jiu-jitsu, trained in ground fighting, and, you know, maybe appreciated or knew more about the grappling aspect to the game? Do you sort of find now that this new group of fans maybe aren't as familiar with the Abu Dhabi kind of tournaments and those type of titles that someone like you has?
Well, I think before, like, a lot of people that were followers or involved in the, like, MMA community were, you know, because it wasn't on TV so much, it was just, you know, you had to watch a pay-per-view or you caught it basically because you were a fan, you know, on the website or, you know, going to grappling events. So you're pretty much a hardcore fan. And so, of course, you knew about the Grappler's Quest and the Nagas and the Abu Dhabis and, mm-hmm. you know, these little tournaments here and there, as well as, like, the actual fighting. But I gotta realize is a whole new generation, a whole new group of fans have been brought in by being on Spike TV and the Ultimate Fighter show and such like that, where all they see basically is, you know, the show. And so that's what they, you know, MMA, and then they follow it. And I think it'll take time for, like, the Abu Dhabi stuff and you know, the grappling and stuff to come along, because, yeah, you just brought in a bunch of new people that are watching, you know, on TV and stuff, and they don't know, you know, they're not actually doing jiu-jitsu, or they're not actually involved in it in that way, and so they don't know about those things, but they will. It's just a matter of time. You know, Abu Dhabi will come around next year, and then it'll be on the internet a lot, and, you know, be mentioned, and, you know, then it's just a matter of, like, filtering down. It'll become bigger, but it's just, you incorporate a whole bunch of new people, as fans or followers of the fighting that don't know, you know, kind of like everything about, like, how they got to that point. Because, you know, you got to that point by doing a million little grappling tournaments and a million little amateur shows, you know, building up. It's not just like, oh, I want to be a fighter, and you went to the show and all of a sudden you're in the UFC. It doesn't work like that very often. So I think, like I said, it's just a time thing, you know?
Yeah. Now, in researching this interview as well, and Brendan did some of this research too, and we were talking about it, and we briefly discussed it with Dennis. Not everyone necessarily knows about some of your political beliefs and the fact that you have some interest in some, I guess you could say, left-wing political ideologies. And there's some groups out there that have interviewed and talked to you. As having some of those beliefs in a country that, you know, is increasingly growing more conservative. Did you ever run into incidents where, you know, you'd rather not talk about some of your political standpoints because of sort of the ignorance some people have about what anarchy means or anything like that?
That's a good question. Basically, I just feel like I have an obligation to say what I feel. You know, and sometimes people are like, well, you know, you just fought. We don't want to hear that. We didn't come here to be, you know, to learn about politics and stuff. And, you know, I just don't like that excuse because, you know, we have, you know, during World War II, it was like, you know, all those people like that lived in Germany, just the regular citizens and stuff. But it's like, oh, I don't want to know about, you know, the concentration camps. I don't want to know about it. I'm just, you know, going about my business. And to me, it's the same thing, you know, where, you know, things are going on in this world right now that are really atrocious and really, you know, unhumane. And it's not a United States thing, and it's not a one country thing. It's a thing that our leaders of this country and some other countries and corporate leaders are letting go on because of profit. And, you know, the Iraq War is just obviously the most blatant example of that, but not obviously not the only thing going on. And, you know, our media, we just ignore it and just, you know, go on with our daily lives as long as we can, you know, provide, you know, enough and have a house and a car and some nice things and take a vacation, then we don't want to know about it. And, you know, I have, you know, grew up with the opportunity to have those things. You know, I grew up in a white middle class, you know, mom and dad were there and had a car and this and that, but, you know, I knew something was wrong, and I was able to be educated, kind of, you know, and I'm very thankful for that I was able to, you know, kind of really see what was going on. And there's a lot I don't know. I'm not pretending to know everything, but it's just that when you see people suffering that don't need to suffer, and other people have, and making laws and rules and killing other people in order to keep what they have, then, you know, that's not right. And it doesn't take a political scientist, and it doesn't take an activist or anyone left-wing or right-wing or whatever to see that that's wrong. You know, there's right and wrong, and it's just wrong. So, you know, that's what I believe, and I think I have a, you know, sense, you know, put in this, you know, opportunity to say something where people are going to listen, and some people are going to disagree, and I've had people disagree with me, and some people are going to agree, and I've had people agree. You know, I've done seminars in England where, you know, I spoke before some groups, and, you know, I've been in Olympia right before my fight doing some protests and that, and I've been in Miami for the FTA meetings and protesting that. So, you know, I'm out there, you know, doing what I can, and I just, you know, it's just, I'm just one little person doing what they can. There's a lot of people that do a heck of a lot more than me. And I think in the bottom line, everyone's got an obligation to stand up and say, hey, this isn't right. You know, whether you believe in, you know, the Republicans or Democrats or the U.S. or whatever it is, it's not about that. People try to categorize it into, you know, anarchism or communism or capitalism, whatever. But what it comes down to is treating people right. And that's what I believe in. And, you know, I do believe in anarchism. But the point is that when there's wrong going on in the world and you have an opportunity to make a difference, then you should do it if you can, you know. And I've just an opportunity where I can.
No, you know, exactly. And I think a lot of people perhaps don't know that, that side of you, your political beliefs. Is it something, you know, from fans on the outside looking in? And I remember I haven't talked to Caleb Starnes in person about this, but I have, I remember him with an interview with Forrest Griffin, him mentioning that two of his favorite authors are Howard Zinn and Noam Chomsky. Is this, you know, do you think in a way that some people would be actually surprised to hear that, you know, that there are fighters out there who behind the scenes or even in front of the scenes have these kind of conversations and talks and are actually very active in various communities, whether they're left-wing or right-wing?
I think people, you know, need to realize, like, you know, and some people do realize is that we're just regular people. You know, some of us are right-wing, some of us, you know, like good, nice cars, some of us like, you know, like anchovies on our pizza or whatever, you know. It's like we're just regular people that just take fighting for a living, just like any other person out in the limelight, an actor, a singer, whatever. We're just regular people, and I just like to always kind of stay grounded and remember that, you know what I mean? Because when I come home and see my kids, they don't care whether I've fought. They didn't watch the fight. They haven't watched any of my fights. And it's not because I won't let them. They just have no care to. You know, I might go to their school and a couple of their friends are like, oh, it's a snowman. But they just want to play tag, you know,
right.
on the recess. They don't care what I do as long as I'm home and, you know, there for them and play games with them and stuff like that. So it really keeps you grounded and reminds you that you're just a regular person. You know, you just kind of choose to fight for a living. And, you know, I'm blessed with the opportunity that I can do something that I enjoy. But in the end, I'm just really working. It is a job, you know, get a paycheck at the end and working for someone else. And, you know, that's kind of part of the system that I don't agree with. But, you know, at the same point, I feel very fortunate that at least I can do something that I enjoy.
Now, you mentioned the snowman nickname. For those people who maybe don't know, haven't seen your website or read about it, just tell us a little bit about how you got that nickname, the snowman.
Well, I was in Abu Dhabi in 99, and I was training at AMC, and basically I got invited only because Matt Hume he was friends with the Sheik there, and I was able to bring a team. So I think Josh Barnett was a heavy, and I was a light heavy, and we had other guys filling up the weight classes. So we went over there, and I had Brazilian every round. The first guy, you know, I beat, and then I fought, I think, Roberto Traven. Beat him, and then I fought I think Keegan Machado in the semis and beat him, and then it kind of, as I went along, the Brazilian, so you know, is obviously white, very white.
Yeah.
They said all this snowball is kind of rolling through the Brazilians or whatever, and then in the final I had a Brazilian, I won, and Saul Roberto. And they said, like a snowball running, rolling through. And then I think it got translated into snowman. And they gave it to me, and I, like, stuck ever since. I don't know if that's what I would have picked for a nickname. Doesn't seem too scary, but I don't know. If you get one, I guess you get one.
Well, yeah, I think people right away, I mean, that's one of those names that they want to know, right? They hear snowman, and, oh, that's kind of cool. I wonder why he's called that. It's one of those kind of nicknames. Rather than, like, you know, just like the demolition man or...
Right.
The cat smasher, which are usually kind of self-explanatory.
Yeah.
Well, Jeff, we appreciate you coming on the show. I know you've been doing a lot of traveling, and you want to spend time with your family, so we really appreciate you coming on the show, and wish you best of luck in the future.
Hey, I appreciate you having me on the show, and I'd just say thank you to all my fans, Debbie and all my friends at American Top Team, Juan Santana and Roddy Ferguson and Josh Shockman, Josh Barnett, and especially all my friends at ATT.
Okay, thanks again, Jeff.
Thank you.
All right. Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world. Hey guys, Kelsey Mowat here from Full Contact Fighter Radio. Listen, if you have any comments, questions, or just want to flat-out tell me off, contact me at radio@fcfighter.com. That address, again, is radio@fcfighter.com.
Any correspondence that is sent to Mr. Moa must be presented in business letter format in an aerial script with a font point no larger than 12 and no smaller than 8. All letters must be written in UK English and must be received by Mr. Moa before no later than 12 hours prior to the posting of this program. Any fiscal donations must be in Canadian currency, and please pay no attention to this previous statement.
All right, joining us now on Full Contact Fighter Radio is Bill the Butcher Mahood. Bill, how are you doing today?
Doing really good. How about you?
I'm doing good, thanks. How are things up in Prince George?
Well, besides the rain, not too bad at all.
Oh, nice to hear. Now, I see, Bill, that I saw that you recently had a professional boxing bout. Tell us a little bit about that, and what are your plans in regards to boxing?
Well, I got one of those funny calls as a fighter where your boxing coach phones you, and the first thing he says is, "How much do you weigh?" Well, you know something's up.
Yeah.
So I was actually jumped in to replace Shane Beaver on a card that he was supposed to be be making his pro debut in Edmonton on 3 days' notice. So, you know, it was just fun.
And so for the people who maybe didn't know, tell us a little bit about the end of the fight and what happened. And
well, it was one of those fun things in that, you know, only 3 days' notice, you don't have a lot of time to worry about it. I'd been training a little bit, so I wasn't in great shape, but I was pretty confident that I'd be able to hang for, you know, 4 rounds of boxing. Got in there with a guy who'd had one pro fight, and I was able to pretty much dominate the fight and prevent him from answering the bell for the fourth and final round.
Oh, okay. Now, obviously, we're doing a mixed martial arts show here, and you're one of Canada's more established light heavyweight fighters. Bill, what's going on as far as your MMA career? Do you have some plans coming up? I know there was some talk about you possibly going down to Australia to fight again down there. You've had some success down there. What's next for you? Do you know at this point?
Well, I ended up with a detached retina after my fight with Cote in February. Not so much from the fight, the doctors figure, but from just prolonged abuse on the eye for, you know, years, like the straw that broke the camel's back. Mm-hmm. So I got over that, got all healed up, and did the first, my first comeback was the boxing fight, which was, you know, just fun. I was looking to have a fight with Anthony Parosh in Australia July 15th, mm-hmm. and then Anthony got pulled up for the last UFC card where he fought Jeff Munson. So unfortunately that fell through, and without a, you know, a marquee name to fight, there wasn't a whole lot of point flying all the way to Australia.
Yeah.
So now I'm looking at possibly, you know, grabbing something for the fall for myself. And in the meantime, I've got a whole stable of fighters we're taking care of that are just busy like crazy.
Yeah, and let's get into that. That was one of my next questions. Obviously, you know, you've got a huge involvement with Epic Management, Team Epic. Tell us a little bit about your role in Team Epic before we get into some of the particular fighters that you are helping manage.
Yeah, we started up Epic here a couple years back, actually. Dennis Tang, myself, Jason McDonald with Greg Allen. And we kind of, you know, did a few things with it, and then it got stagnant. Greg got real busy with his career in the movie industry. So a little while ago, we decided to, you know, resurrect it, myself, Dave Fazer. And what we did is we decided to include representation for clubs we're involved in, such as Revolution Fight Team in Langley, Universal Mixed Martial Arts in Vancouver with Marcus Suarez and Dave Fazer, as well as my boys up there in Prince George.
Now, you know, if you look at Western, well, not even just in Western Canada now, I mean, if you look at any mixed martial arts card that's been going on in Canada lately, there's always some of your fighters out there. Let's go through, I mean, some of the guys, like, right away, Team Revolution, some of the names on that roster immediately stand out. And the biggest name, I guess you could say for sure, because of his success on the Ultimate Fighter reality show, is Caleb Starnes.
Yeah, Caleb's been involved with The Fortress, which is one of his sponsors. And when we got going with Epic and Revolution, Caleb, you know, came over with his sponsor and joined the team. Yeah, Caleb's brought a lot of notoriety to Revolution in particular because of his his spot on the Ultimate Fighter 3 show.
Now, if you look at some of the other Team Revolution guys as well, I mean, there's some names that are beginning to clearly stand out, and Tyler Jackson is one of those fighters. What's, and Tyler just recently fought in the Maritimes. Tell us a little bit about, for some of maybe our American listeners who don't know too much about TNT Jackson, tell us a little bit about Tyler Jackson and what's in store for him coming up.
Well, Tyler Jackson is, the developing fighter at 155. I think that he has the definite potential to, you know, go all the way in that weight class. He's very dynamic, very powerful, athletic. He's got a really good boxing pedigree. He went to a very, very close decision with Sam Hansestone Stout in a TKO before he started training with us. Since then, he's really improved his, you know, the rest of his game, his wrestling, his jiu-jitsu. Since then, he's been on a bit of a tear with quite a few wins, King of the Cage, Elite Fighting Championships, you know, to mention a few. He's someone who's definitely someone to watch.
Now, Tim Thurston, I saw him fight at the Elite Fighting Championship that you mentioned. Is he one of Revolution's boxing coaches as well, or is he just, got really, really good stand-up?
Well, he helps with the boxing in the gym at Revolution. He just loves the stand-up game. Mm-hmm. That Elite show was beautiful because he had found an opponent who was willing to stand there with him. Most guys, you know, once they get hit a couple times by Tim, they tend to want to try and, you know, close things up, take it to the ground, or do something different. They feel the power. But, you know, that was a great opportunity for Tim to showcase his hands because, like he said, he had a real game opponent who was willing to stand there and, you know, and go the distance, well, until he got knocked out, with Tim.
Now, Tyler Goenberg, Todd Goenberg, sorry, he's got a coaching role with Team Revolution as well. And I also heard some reports that he might jump back into MMA competition again. He's taken some time off. Is he going to be fighting soon, or did he fight recently?
Well, he's been really focusing on boxing. He had injured his back doing a little wrestling here some time ago and just wanted to take the time to properly, properly heal it, get going again. So he's had a number of professional boxing matches that he's done really well in. He's now jumping back in and is actively training in mixed martial arts again. And, we'll be able to see him jump in the ring here in the fall for sure.
And then another guy I want to mention, and this name is, you know, starting to gain some notoriety throughout Canada, and I think will be shortly in the United States, is one of the better 145-pounders in Canada is Ben Greer. And I saw him fight Ian Loveland at that Elite show, and that was an amazing fight. Tell us a little bit about Ben Greer, and for some of the American listeners or Canadian listeners who aren't familiar with Ben, what are your expectations for Mr. Greer?
Well, Ben's another real standout. He hasn't been training that long, surprisingly enough. He's got a good wrestling background. He's one of Marcus Soares' kind of shining stars with Marcus's BJJ program. He's coming up now in cross-training with Tony Pep. He's doing a lot of well-rounding his skills, I guess you could say. We put him in with Loveland as a real test to see, you know, where he was sitting. He lost the first round, I think, just out of not being confident. Once he realized, holy, I can hang with this guy and dominate, he won every other round. I think Ben, we're looking to probably bring Ben over to Japan at 145 until he gets, you know, a little older, and probably then bring him up into the 155-pound category to fight in, you know, things bigger shows like the UFC or the Atlantic City shows.
Yeah, and you know, that was the one thing that, you know, I heard quite some good things about Ben, and I had interviewed Ben actually shortly after that fight, and I told him one of the things that I guess I can say surprised me was, you know, he's going up against a Team Quest member in Ian Loveland, and Ben, I didn't realize, and I was quickly corrected how outstanding his wrestling was, and he out wrestled Loveland, and that was the turning point in the fight, was his wrestling capabilities.
Yeah, he's got good takedowns. He fought Justin Tavernini, one of Lee Mean's boys, at a King of the Cage, and it was the same thing. I mean, his wrestling shone through. Tavernini's a really good Muay Thai kickboxer, mm-hmm. and he didn't even get an opportunity to set up a combo. He just simply got dumped on his back, slammed, and controlled the entire match.
Now, we had Jason McDonald on last week, one of your former training partners, and we were discussing the middleweight rankings of Canada, and I'd like to get your opinion on this, because I know that you've competed up against both those guys at light heavyweight, but Jason's contention was that he feels that if you take Dennis Kang out of the mix, another guy that you've trained with extensively, but if you take Dennis Kang out of the mix as far as Canadian middleweights go, because he fights primarily internationally, Jason thought that he thinks right now that Patrick Cote is the best Canadian middleweight, not David Loiseau. You have an opinion on that? I mean, like, coming from a guy who's competed against both McDonald and Cote?
Well, I mean, I've never had an opportunity to roll with Loiseau. I mean, he's the fellow probably with the best pedigree. I mean, he's got the best performances at the highest level of anyone other than, say, Kang in Canada, mm-hmm. which would have to really put him on, you know, on the books as the number one guy at 185 in the country. You're then looking at Jason McDonald and Patrick Cote. Cote, you know, beat McDonald, so that would have to give Cote number two. Mm-hmm. And then that puts Jason in probably your third spot with, I don't think, a whole lot of people to contend.
No, you'd want to throw Joe Jerkson in there.
Well, but Joe, again, it's tough to call Joe, you know, just a Canadian fighter. Because he's all over the place doing everything.
Yeah.
Joe did you know, did get beat by McDonald, but then again, he lost, he beat Cote. Mm-hmm. So there's that little mix in and around there. But I don't think there's many other guys that could fit in that group of four.
Now, without going into some of the specifics, because I don't know if you're aware of this, but there's been some issues as far as the Ultimate Fighter Season 4 and some of the results being spoiled or revealed, and I know people have varying opinions on that and the merit of that. But I think it's safe to say that we all know that Patrick Cote entered into that show and did fairly well. Were you surprised, or did you kind of expect him to have some success in that show, in that program, when you heard that he had been accepted into the comeback version of The Ultimate Fighter?
Well, I was surprised that he'd go on it. I mean, my own personal opinion for that show is all those guys who are on that show, they're all veterans. They're all warriors. I mean, they should be treated like veterans and warriors and you know, have a distinguished spot in our sport. And to go out there and run around living like goons in a house for 7 weeks trying to compete for a spot back into a show that they already belong in is, to me, kind of silly.
Yeah.
The competition on that show looked pretty steep, though.
Yeah.
I think, you know, in those shows, it really depends on what the producers want, what ends up on the editing floor, how they direct things to kind of look at their own outcome. Injuries also play a huge role. You look at Caleb's situation in Ultimate Fighter 3.
Of course, yeah.
You know, he was a favorite. You know, a real bad injury to his rib kind of took him out of the show. So anything can happen in there. I mean, those guys are being stuck together like animals in a house for 7 weeks, expected to train, you know, twice a day. Man, anything can happen. But I expect Patrick to be able to hang with, you know, anybody at 185.
Now, and going back to Caleb, and I mean, there's another guy that you could definitely throw in as one of Canada's better middleweights, and now he's kind of on the international scene. But what are your thoughts and hopes for Caleb as far as his involvement with the UFC?
Well, I think that I think he'll do really well there. Caleb just simply hasn't had an opportunity yet to fight some of the big name guys like Dirksen's had the chance to fight, or McDonald, or even Cote, Wazo. They've all fought on the international stage, done well, proven themselves. Caleb's first real challenge was Jason McDonald. Now, he took that fight and, you know, he dominated. He's also now been able to, you know, jump in and, you know, have his first exposure on, you know, the Ultimate Fighter, Ultimate Fight Night show. And, I mean, he did away with that Daniel Abadi, you know, in no time at all. Mm-hmm. I think we can expect to see Caleb continue on in the UFC, and I would imagine with his skill, you know, his tenacity, he's a training maniac. I think we'll see him start fighting, you know, the Ultimate Fight Night TV shows. You'll start seeing him then as a main event on the air, and then you'll see him on the UFC.
Now, you are one of the mainstays in Canadian mixed martial arts, and what I mean by that is your involvement with Epic, your own professional career, and then for some people who don't realize as well, you've done some promoting for with your Extreme Fighting Challenge, which was held in Prince George, British Columbia. What's plan next for the XFC? Do you have another show coming up this year?
Yeah, we've got a lot of plans that are coming together. We're doing a bunch of work with King of the Cage Canada, trying to grow the brand, and you know, I was involved with when King of the Cage came to Prince George, and I fought Patrick Cote. We're going to continue with that. The Extreme Fighting Challenge is still alive and well. We're planning another show here in Prince George end of October. We're able to every year grow that show. I mean, our last event drew in 3,300 spectators. So every year it's getting a little better, and we're getting you know, more and more top talent on it, as well as I'm in a great position to, you know, pick really good up-and-comers, and I think our matchmaking has been really fortunate so far, and that the events that we've put on have had, you know, really good battles, really well-matched guys.
And, you know, I think that sometimes people, especially south of the border, you know, the success of and growth of mixed martial arts in Canada, I think at times goes you know, to an extent, unnoticed. And, you know, what are your thoughts, and maybe fill in some people here on the fact about, you know, the growth of mixed martial arts in Canada and the recent announcement this week that Sportsnet, Rogers Sportsnet, is going to be showing IFL, King of the Cage, and the XFC, and I believe some of the ECC shows in the Maritimes are going to be shown on TSN. RDS has been showing TKO events for quite some time. What are your thoughts about the growth of mixed martial arts in Canada? I mean, obviously you're in favor of it, but do you think it is as huge and explosive of a growth as I'm putting it out as?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's nowhere else where I think you're going to get this kind of a following with such a small population base. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at California now that it's legal. You know, there's an explosion of small shows, but you're dealing with, you know, what, 27 million people in the state alone. All of Canada has 27 million, and we're looking at just in Canada alone, I've got fighters competing, or have been competing since, what, June 4th, every single weekend, pretty much all the way through the summer.
Wow.
And the summer is really the slow time. We've got everything from the ECC is putting on, you know, they put on Halifax, then Moncton, they're back to Halifax. We've got guys competing in, you know, we've got MFC coming up again, what, September 8th. We've got a card that Lee Meehan's helping to put on in Fort McMurray, middle of August. We've got Elite in Vancouver. We've got King of the Cage putting on, what, half a dozen shows a year.
Right.
My promotion, XFC. And then there's, you know, so many others. WFF is still involved. You know, we've got NFC, NAC.
TKO.
There's so much promotion, so many places to fight. It's really, really exploding.
Well, Bill, you're definitely one of the key players in the Canadian mixed martial arts scene, and we'd like to talk to you again. Anytime you've got another fight coming up, keep us apprised of what's going on in your own career, and thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Well, I appreciate being on the show. I mean, a guy can't fight forever, so I'm too addicted to the sport to quit, so I got to find myself another outlet for my addiction. So maybe a few more fights, and then you'll be able to see me just being a promoter and a manager.
Okay, well, we'll talk to you again soon then, Bill. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Mixed martial arts legends collide at the Midwestern debut of the International Fight League, Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. See the wildest International Fight League team competition yet as the Quad City Silverbacks defend their home turf against the New York Pitbulls. And be there to witness the return of hometown hero Pat Milicic as he squares off in a fight to the finish against Jiu-Jitsu master Enzo Gracie. 11 total fights, including Quad City taking on New York and the Columbus Razor Club, led by Mark Coleman, battling the Toronto Dragons, coached by Carlos Newton. Plus, the historic supermatch of Milicic versus Gracie. It all happens Saturday, September 23rd at the Mark of the Quad Cities in Moline, Illinois. Tickets start at $28.50 and are on sale now at Ticketmaster.com. Or charge by phone at 563-326-1111. That's 563-326-1111. The International Fight League. Pure sport. For more information, go to IFL.tv.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining us once again on a business venture out in Toronto is Mr. Brendan Lear. Brendan, thanks for, you know, calling me up today to do the outro, as we would call it in budget podcast internet radio language.
Always very happy to be here, Kelsey.
Now, looking ahead to next week, this weekend's not as much going on, but next weekend, July 22nd, of course, is the rebirth of the World Fighting Alliance, the WFA, in Los Angeles, going to be held at the Forum pay-per-view.
Hopefully we get it on in Canada on pay-per-view. I noticed the pay-per-view menu is littered with second, third, and fourth rate programming, so hopefully we get this show, and it looks to be a great show. A few sentimental favorites, and Boss and Chemo, and a few world class fighters. And, you know, I think Rampage and Linlin is going to be a phenomenal fight. We get to see Linlin at 205 and see if he can how he goes up in weight. And we get to see Rampage fight for the first time in front of in America as the famous Rampage Jackson as a top tier fighter.
Yeah, and, you know, I was going to ask you about that because I've had trouble, too, finding out whether or not the WFA pay-per-view is going to, in fact, be on. And my experience is when I call my cable provider, they don't usually even know themselves. as far as what's coming up, you know? Like, they pretty much look at the guy that you pull up on digital cable or you can at home, and they don't ever seem to really know that much more than what's shown on the menu.
It never ceases to amaze me when I talk to my cable company that television actually comes through the wire into my house. It seems like more of a collection of miracles that I actually get television, speaking to their customer service people.
Yeah, I mean, I have no idea. I've seen a couple threads on different MMA forums, you know, speculating that it will be shown, but, you know, I hope so. They showed, out here in Vancouver, they showed the Gracie Hammerhouse card, you know, which I didn't get, but they did show that the actual night, or was it the Gracie Hammerhouse? Or is that what I said? Anyways, but yeah, they showed that, but I haven't, and they actually had that up on the menu for a couple weeks in advance, but so far there's nothing out here in Vancouver for the WFA.
That's been the case with the last Pride Bushido show was that like that. It didn't go up in the menu until the day of, I think, so not a surprise. And apparently some of the news this week was that the Bushido show will not be aired in pay-per-view, the second round of the Bushido show, and it looks like it will be broadcast in an edited version on Fox, so this kind of a bittersweet mixed blessing. It will be sort of edited to broadcast towards the North American market, which means, however, that I'm sure some of the fights will be cut out, and of course there's been some belly aching about that. What do you think about that, Kelsey?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I would like to see it, you know, any fight card. Yeah, I want to see it that night. I want to, you know, I've spoke about this before. I hate having the results spoiled. I like seeing the fights live or, you know, within a couple hours or 12 hours so they don't know the results. So, of course, you know, I always want to see the fights right then and as close to the actual event as possible.
Yeah, I don't think MMA is at the state right now. You know, the World Cup was that the diehard fans are going to get up at 6 a.m. to watch wherever, play wherever. So I think we'll always have a bit of a delay from Japan especially, but day's delay is just absolutely unacceptable. You know, it's like watching the Super Bowl the 2 days after, or the Grey Cup the days after, 2 days after. So it's not the same.
Well, I mean, yeah, hopefully the WFA is showing on pay-per-view, and you're absolutely right, there's some interesting fights alongside the Boss Chemo fight and the Lindland Rampage Jackson fight. There's also going to be Jason Mayhem Miller, who has, you know, risen to quite a high level of fame, I guess you could say, in his competition in Hawaii and at Icon. And he's fighting Lodin Sincade from the Ultimate Fighter reality TV series.
Are you a Mayhem Monkey, Kelsey?
I'm not a Mayhem Monkey. I have interviewed Jason previously, and it is a most interesting interview. If you're going to have to interview a fighter, definitely Jason. Talking to Jason is one of the more interesting experiences you will have as a MMA writer. There is no question about that, and maybe we can get a hold of him next week.
Would you prefer to interview him in person or have a telephone line in between you?
Yeah, I don't know, man. When I talked to him, he was in Starbucks, and he was like talking to clerks and asking them some of the questions that I'd asked them, and it was weird. It was weird. And then obviously you got Rico Rodriguez fighting Ron Waterman. Two guys, two heavyweights that have fought at, you know, the highest levels of MMA competition, and Rico Rodriguez would be the name that stands out to more fans, I would say, having been the UFC champion and competed in Pride. And that'll be interesting to see what kind of shape Rico comes in to the event at.
It will be. I've seen the preliminary photos of Rico, and I think for the again for the more savvy fan, Rico is one of these fighters who has never really lost. You know, had a big losing streak. He lost once to Tim Sylvia. He lost his heavyweight title and then didn't fight again, didn't fight again in the UFC, and had admitted openly that it wasn't actually worth his while fighting in the UFC, as he was making more money in lesser shows, and so it would be interesting to see him fight at a high level again. And hopefully, you know, Rico is a very, very talented fighter, and hopefully we'll be able to get to see Rico have enough incentive to fight at his best, which means in great shape and with a lot of attitude and with ill intent, as with his Nogueira fight, which you know stands out in my mind as in my mind is one of his best fights, and arguably it was under any other rules except for pride rules, probably a win for Rico.
Yeah, and it was an impressive performance, albeit somewhat boring and stifling, you could argue. Just pulling up the FCF database, and I'd forgotten this too, so I'm not pulling this out trying to look like Mr. MMA expert here, but he did fight, talking about Rico Rodriguez, he did fight Pedro Hizo at UFC 45 and lost a unanimous decision in November of 2003. After he lost to Nogueira at Pride Total Elimination 2003. So he has fought in the UFC since his loss to Tim Sylvia. And I think, you know, you mentioned the fact that he started fighting in smaller shows and that, you know, in order to get ready for big fights, he had to train so much and that if he fought more lesser-known opponents on a more frequent basis, he could make the same amount of money as he did in the UFC, if not more. And, you know, I did hear interviews where he spoke openly about that, but I think, you know, with him losing to Robert Barone at Rage in the Cage 78 in January of this year, I think that, you know, kind of demonstrates the fact that, you know, he's an extremely skilled guy, but even you're going to run into someone on some night if you go into fights that out of shape on a consistent basis. Someone's going to beat you, and that's, in fact, what happened.
Well, I think that's the case now, and in, I guess the heavyweight category was probably the last for that to be true. But I think if you go into any fight out of shape, you have the potential to lose, and you just run into that wall, and people don't appreciate, no matter how skilled you are, and this is one of the things that we saw Ortiz reiterating again and again and again and again to his fighters on the reality show, that you know fitness is a weapon, and if you take a fight late into three rounds and you have fitness and the other fighter doesn't, you have an enormous advantage regardless of your natural skill and regardless of your resources otherwise.
And the rematch, it's going to be a rematch with Ron Waterman, and who beat Rico Rodriguez in 2005 and at the World Extreme Cage Fighting 16. So that's going to be a rematch. And you know what? I'm not going to be able to really pull a prediction on this fight. I haven't seen Rico fight any of his last few fights. I haven't seen. I can't say if it's Rico Rodriguez of old and he comes in shape and on top of his game, then for sure I would think that he's got to be the favorite against Ron Waterman.
I would think as well, and I guess we have no reason to believe that Rico would take a big fight like this and not make the best of it. And that's certainly my hope. For this fight, and hopefully he will live up to expectations of all his fans and people who want to see him fight at his best.
Anyways, Brandon, we should get out of here. Thanks again, and have a safe trip back from Toronto to lovely Edmonton.
Thank you very much, Kelsey, and have a glorious day in Vancouver, an evening in Vancouver, and I will speak to you next week.
Okay, take care, man.